Innovation, disruption, and big issues. This is Business Game Changers with Sarah Westall.
Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall. Today we are going to be finishing our amazingly interesting conversation we've been having with dark journalist Daniel Linst. I don't want to waste too much time, but before I get into that, I want to remind you to go to my website at sarahwestall.com. You can hear the first part of that interview there or on any of the podcast channels, also on YouTube. And I do highly recommend you to go there and listen to part one because this is absolutely fascinating. He's one of the world's leading journalists into the deep state and how it works. And so I highly recommend that you do take some time and listen to part one. But let's not waste much more time now and get right back into that interview with Daniel Linst, dark journalist.
But really, when we say the deep state, we're talking about a force that's operating here outside of the Constitution. So it should be under constitutional law, and it's not.
Well, we have bases all over the world, right? Something like 1,200 bases, and we pretty much are the police force of the world to a large extent. And I would think the deep state has a connection to that. Maybe I'm reaching here, but I would think there's something tying that with all these powerful players in the world.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it has to, let's say they get their marching orders, though, right here from the United States, because that's where the deep state intelligence operations are a big piece of the deep state. The financial powers are a big piece of the deep state. But once those, you know, we've been building these relationships around the world, and there's no doubt that the deep state has a huge impact around the world. You know, for example, if we call the JFK assassination a deep event, which is something the deep state caused so that they could do things like the Vietnam War, well, we're having a huge impact on Asia by starting a war with Vietnam in 1964 with the Gulf of Tonkin incident, which didn't happen, as we know. So, you know, there's a deep event for you. I do think that we do have to think of it as global, but the source of it, its operation, should be under the Constitution. So we're saying, for example, the intelligence agencies and the contracting agencies that work around them, like Booz Allen Hamilton, they're operating in this extra constitutional fashion. They're operating outside of the regular rule of law. That's the issue. It's sort of the key issue. Now it spreads into all these other countries the way that you're talking about, because it might change our policy in Iraq. You know, it might change our policy in Vietnam. It might change our policy in Syria. So we can see it has that worldwide impact. But in terms of localizing it and being able to rein it in, it's here. It's supposed to be operating under our Constitution, and they've certainly gone off that. But interestingly enough, it's been over 50 years that they've been operating like that. So they don't, you know, they show no signs of slowing up. It's kind of fascinating, because when you get into the history, we take the CIA as kind of a given now. Just there it is. But interestingly enough, shortly after President Kennedy was assassinated, Harry Truman, who had started the CIA, came out and gave a huge editorial about it was time to abolish the CIA and turn it back into what it was supposed to be, which was an intelligence gathering network. And it was not supposed to be responsible for covert actions. Those things were supposed to be handled by the military. And what happened is the CIA became too much of a power base on its own. And it got too strong. It has its own air force, and it started to wield its own power. And then, you know, people like Nixon, who was a real power player, was deathly afraid of Richard Helms, who was his CIA director, because of what kind of maneuvering he might do against him. And this was the kind of power play that we started to see. But the CIA is supposed to be under congressional authority. And it's, you know, the deep state aspects of it, which is generally the covert operations side of the deep state, of the CIA, and these intelligence agencies working, those things either have to be reined in or, you have situations like what we're seeing in America now, which is there are huge propaganda wars going on. And, you know, it's not, that's not a way to have unity. They just want their objectives. In this case, I think we've identified at least Cold War II. That's one of their objectives. The globalization has to be kept in mind, because if somebody were to say, well, you know, Wall Street and the CIA are the same thing, you might think, how does that work out? But in truth, the CIA was started by Wall Street, because Alan Dulles was a lawyer on Wall Street for Sullivan and Cromwell when Harry Truman tapped him to develop this intelligence network. So it's grown into this arm of the financial interests here. And it's extremely dangerous, which is why when we talk about Bezos and people of that ilk, you know, Howard Schultz from Starbucks got into a lot of trouble by taking a big political stand against Trump. And, you know, we're starting to see now it's moving into this thing of corporate collusion. And, you know, we can see in terms of our society now, the corporations have incredible control. But if they're going to Bilderberg, if they're going to Davos, you know, if they're getting $660 million contracts for cloud computing for the CIA, we're going to have to look at those relationships in a new way and, you know, open it up. So, you know, this is the thing, that the intelligence connection with Wall Street, with the corporations, you know, that is a fundamental of the deep state. And if we don't get a good look at it, we're not going to know, you know, why we're in this kind of situation we're in with the body politic of America at this time.
Well, yeah, I think the world has changed and we're in a different stage. But the one thing that I think is really interesting is how much money the East has. They aren't in debt. They have surplus of cash. And we're sitting with this huge debt. They have less shackles, right?
And, oh, yeah.
And so very interesting to see how this whole deep state connection with China and the East will be, because let's face it, they want to control the world. There's very much everybody wants to control the world or have power all over the place. So it'll be interesting to see really what that connection is.
Well, there's no doubt about it that China is completely rose on the fact that America's manufacturing base got gutted. And, well, the rationalization was, we're all going to get a lot more free products. It's going to be less expensive, right? I mean, you could buy a TV back in the day. It was $800. Then they were like $300 or something. And so, you know, we had amazing, the clothing, cost of clothing went down. So there was that aspect of it. But by moving the manufacturing base wholesale over there, the corporations also didn't have to deal with labor laws. And this was a major aspect. Yeah. As a matter of fact, the TPP, which Obama was so in favor of and tried to ram down Congress's throat before he left, completely stripped out worker rights. It was just like, you know, it had nothing to do with anything anymore. And which it's pretty unusual. You might think, well, Democrats, they're so concerned about human rights. Well, it just wasn't in there. So this became a thing that even Clinton couldn't protect, as she was saying, you know, during the campaign, well, we've taken another look at it. It's not so great, you know, while Obama was for it. And of course, had she got in, she would have tweaked some little thing and they would have had a new trade deal going. I think there is a fundamental thing about the political situation that we're in America today. We have to understand that really since the 70s and 80s, they've been moving the manufacturing base overseas so they could get cheap labor. And that is an operation of the corporations working through the political environment to create these policies that are favorable to them. I think that part's pretty obvious. But now I think it's kind of an end game on that, because there's only so much we can do without our manufacturing base, without the ability to hire our own people and generate our own money. As the leader of the world, we're going to have to go back to those policies. And I think that's why America turned to Trump in this election, because he was the one who was saying that. And, you know, Trump was very aware of the independent media and what they call conspiracy theories and all the rest of it. You know, it was very important that he was savvy about these issues, and that helped him get in. There's no question about it. Whether or not he'll be able to save the manufacturing base in America and dismantle NAFTA and some of these trade deals the way that he promised that he would, is interesting. I mean, I suppose if the deep state just keeps him off balance and keeps, you know, going over and over again with these alerts through the media that Trump is dangerous, Trump is racist, Trump is anti, you know, anti-American and pro-Russian, you know, and they're getting pretty bizarre. But you have to understand something if you're in independent media, which is if the deep state is trying to take Trump out that way, their next target is going to be you.
So exactly.
I'm very aware of that. And there are a number of sites which have already been hurt by this kind of policy of censorship. And a lot of them went out of business. And what we're seeing Google and Facebook do is under the guise of saying, well, we're going to get rid of fake news, you know. But actually what they're doing and what they're shaping up to do is to censor media that exposes them or where they lose some of their power. And we see these media organizations being hit again and again. You know, they're trying to stir up these controversies and create things where they can say, well, you know, that fake news, they it's unfortunately it's creating these incidents. We have to crack down on it, you know. So we're going to take it out of Facebook feeds, and we're going to Google's going to say any objectionable content, we're going to take our ads off of. So it is interesting. That's their strategy for stifling the independent media. But see, the independent media is, you know, full of really incredible research and a lot of great researchers. And the idea of fake news, which applies, you know, very often mostly to the mainstream media, in my opinion, that's fake news for years, going back to the JFK assassination and the cover-ups through the political system for 50 years. That's fake news. So now you might have sites that abuse certain topics and, you know, whatever it happens to be. But the goal we always have to remember of the deep state working with these corporations, because the deep state has to have a good relationship with things like Facebook or with companies like Google, which, remember, Google's a CIA creation. Let's not forget how tightly they work together. So when you get right down to it, that crackdown has to be favorable to the policies that they want enacted. It doesn't go to Republican Party. It doesn't go to Democrat Party. It's just the policies they want enacted. And so I think what we're looking at is, as independent media people doing this types of investigation, we have to be honest and say, if the deep state is successful in removing Trump or damaging Trump, their next target, and it, I mean, they're kind of doing the targets at the same time anyway, but their next big target will be the independent media, which they've already tried to smear with this ridiculous Washington Post Kremlin list that we talked about, and with Facebook taking out, you know, news that you shouldn't see. And Eric Schmidt had a great quote recently. He's the Google CEO, and he said, they said, well, isn't that censorship if you're going to take out the stuff that you find objectionable? And he said, well, it's not censorship. You just won't see it.
That's censorship.
That is censorship. And, you know, he certainly knows the difference. So it was kind of a clever line on his part. I think he was trying to get out of it. But this is, I think, the battle lines are drawn. It is the deep state operating against the public political system. And there are splits in the deep state, but I think the main thing that we need to keep in mind is the part of the deep state that's operating against this political system, and that is the CIA operating against Trump right now, and the CIA corporate, you know, Bilderberg people acting against fake news or against independent media. This is where the battle lines are drawn, because if people are getting their information, if they're well informed, then a lot of the power of this propaganda loses its real punch, and then they can't do the things that they really want to do.
Well, let's dive into some other things with the deep state. What covert activities do they engage in, other than what we've talked about, that citizens just have no idea over? Like, give us some more examples.
Well, I think probably something that would kind of like shock people is the level of the background of drug running associated with CIA. So I think that this is the kind of thing where people understand it. We've heard it before. There have been echoes about it. There were investigations about it, even. But that kind of backdoor activity where they have a hand in the worldwide drug trade, one of the reasons that we can say this is if you look after the events of September 11th, we, of course, invaded Afghanistan. And some people would say that we had good reason to go in there, and that's debatable. But certainly on the surface of it, we had good reasons to go in. But one of the things the Taliban had done, they were the ruling group, and of course, the Taliban is a very interesting group because they came out of this ultra-conservative Saudi Arabian group that went there that we sent to Afghanistan to fight the Soviets back in the late 80s, which we called the Mujahideen and became Al-Qaeda. But I think when we look at it and we look at that period of time that we're seeing the drug running went down dramatically after they got in power, the Taliban, because as part of their ultra-conservative religious leanings, they didn't believe in drugs. And so they took the poppy fields and they burned them, and the global drug trade went down pretty dramatically. So we were looking at a situation where, you know, those profits weren't being made anymore. So it is unusual. If you look at those stats from the Afghan war, by the time we got involved and went over there, If you check the stats beforehand about where the drug trade was in heroin around the world coming out of Afghanistan, it was almost nil before we got in. And by the time we've been there we must have been there probably 16 years coming up this year. And it's the biggest producer again. It's like 8%. Yeah. So we know that this is kind of there's a stat once in a while that really breaks the bank, and you really look at it and say, this is really telling. And that's the telling stat there. So whatever it is, whatever kind of impact that we're having, and I'm not saying that we're going there and producing the drugs and shipping them out, but whatever it is that our activities do have allowed that drug trade to thrive again. And now that drug trade comes through the black budget into America. So up here on the East Coast, for example, I'm in Boston, we have very pleasant, right above us, the state of Maine, which is one of the nicest places you'd ever want to visit. And the idea of them having a drug epidemic from heroin is about as far out of my imagination as I can imagine, but now that's the case. And it's such an epidemic in Maine and Vermont, and Vermont is very much the same, you know, lots of green trees.
Very lots beautiful.
Yeah, skiing. I mean, you know, this is not a place you'd associate with drug running. But this is the way the black budget works. The same way they go into communities to destroy them by making them major drug and crime centers, they're now stretching out into these more kind of suburban-y outdoor areas and places like Maine and creating huge drug problems.
Does the CIA make money from that to fund their activities?
Well, this is an interesting thing because the CIA is known to have been involved in it, for example, but they do it under the guise of investigating. So you might have a whole group of CIA agents operating and investigating drug crimes in other countries and how drugs get shipped into this country. But there's an element inside of the CIA that works with this deep state, and they're able to facilitate the drug trade. There's no question about it. There's been books written about it. Everything from, of course, the work of Gary Webb. And I have to say, I think Webb's book really captures it in terms of how that operation worked. I remember talking with a government official, and they were saying that the terms that he used for government, this is exactly how things operated in government. So he had a lot of faith that the book was in fact the real deal. But, you know, it's an interesting thing because there is a Wall Street article, Wall Street Journal, that tells us there's a case where the CIA was doing an operation to track how drugs flowed into the country from this particular cartel out of South America. But it said that they imported 27 tons of cocaine, 27 tons, as part of the operation.
That's more than they need to do.
Yeah, I would think so. Yeah. So what does that tell us about the drug operations there? And frankly, if we extrapolate the thought out a little bit more, what's happening when Trump says he wants to build a wall, and that's for immigration purposes, why do they freak out on this level? And are they really that worried about just protecting a country's borders?
Well, obviously, there's some drug implications there.
They're afraid that they're going to get caught. The drug muling across the borders is something that's obviously been protected. And honestly, that's probably a big reason when we're speaking about the Bushes earlier. One of the reasons they didn't endorse Trump is even though he was a Republican and would have been the standard bearer for their, you know, they always get the president to come out and endorse whoever the titular head of the party is. So he was the nominee. Why didn't the Republicans come out?
Very strange.
Yeah, I mean, that's very strange.
Very strange. Well, how about human trafficking? Are they engaged in that?
Well, listen, you did a bold show yourself.
I did, yeah. I know some of the answers to that, but I want to hear. You know I do. But I want to know what you think and what you've heard about that.
Well, a couple of things that come up here, Pedogate and Pizzagate, are very big terms that are being thrown around about the subject of human trafficking and pedophilia. There are cases like the Franklin case, and that was out of Nebraska, where a number of people were charged in child running, and the accusations were heavy against government officials. But they got the case tamped down. They did wind up sending a couple of people to prison over it. But they had other charges against them also. We've seen in the case of Jimmy Savile, who was very close to the royal family, and it's well known now that he was a major pedophile, and that he was an abuser who was kind of protected by that royal class. And other unproven claims about him is that he facilitated this pedophilia, so child trafficking, to those elites. And certainly there's a number of cases like that. So this is a major problem that we need to be looking at. I can cite case after case where there are child pornography stings. There are stings of human trafficking that go on in Canada and the US and the UK, and they uncover huge amounts of people operating like this. So we have to wonder,
it's just not hitting the mass media. They're pretty much dark on this issue. And there's,
they don't like to talk about it.
They really don't. And, you know, a lot of people don't even want to hear about it, but it's an important issue. But there's a lot of victims that have come forward and said, hey, this is what's going on. This is what happened to me. And there are important, powerful people involved. And I don't know how you can just ignore all that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, we had Kathy O'Brien on the Dark Journalist show earlier this year, and she's a remarkable woman who went through this process of being basically trafficked to major politicians. And eventually, after, you know, they didn't only use her for sexual purposes. When she got a little older, they used her for this kind of black budget operations and sent her into other countries to deliver messages. So she really is a wealth of information, and her testimony is there before Congress as a whistleblower. And I think it's a massive issue, because I do think in political circles there's a huge tendency for pedophilia, and I think that in those political circles it's a great channel of blackmail for those people who are engaging in it. So, you know, this is the kind of thing that needs a deep look. The media doesn't like to look at it. Now, interestingly enough, one of the shows that you did, and we've been hearing so much about the topic of Pizzagate, you know, this whole thing came out of WikiLeaks, when people were looking at Podesta's emails, and there were all these strange references to pizza, and it was definitely a code word of some type, and there was enough info in there to extrapolate out the fact that they were talking about child trafficking and using pizza as the code for it. And I think this developed into Pedogate, where people are just looking, like Dennis Hastert, for example, was recently convicted of and he was the former Speaker of the House. He was convicted of raping a teenager. But this was 30 years later, and the teenager came forward, and he was paying him all this money to stay quiet and all the rest of it. So, you know.
And it was a boy.
It was a boy, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I do think that we have to take it seriously and look at it. Now, in Pizzagate, there was so much ricocheting around about it that I don't think we got the right. See, the idea, for example, that David Seaman, who's done a lot of the Pizzagate investigating, he came out of the Huffington Post. They fired him actually for covering Hillary Clinton's health problems. And that was a tough one for them to keep down once she passed out during, that Labor Day event. That was really, she looked like she was going to get out of the race and maybe not even be around much longer. And he covered it. And he said, we have to do this. And the Huffington Post fired him. And he got very into the Pizzagate aspects, looking at Podesta's email, and an aspect of it came up, and they got it around to this pizza place, Comet Ping Pong, where they all hung out, basically, and a lot of political elite do. And Olifantis, who owned the pizza place, was listed as one of the top 50 most influential people in Washington. He'd been to the White House, et cetera. So it was an unusual tie, and they were investigating it. Now, we know that there are aspects in the alternative media that were being forced to, being tried to be silenced on this. And recently we had it with InfoWars, where he issued an apology and said, we had nothing to do with this promotion of this theory or whatever. But everyone found that very unusual.
Yeah, because he never acts like that.
He never does. As we know, that's ammo. Alex Jones. Who made a name for himself by questioning events like Sandy Hook and 9/11 and all the rest of it. And so instead of giving an opinion on that, I think, it's not so much that the fact that Alex Jones isn't interested in this conspiracy, but, what's the nature of the conspiracy that the media doesn't even want to look at it, and that 60 Minutes does a hit piece on it, and they tie it to fake news, and this is their new thing. Pizzagate, fake news, they go together. That means alternative media is bad and mainstream media is good. This is the narrative they're working with. So in a way, they will take these things, organic investigations that pop up through WikiLeaks, which, remember, WikiLeaks has been proven to be a 100% proven source. They've never gotten anything wrong in their leaks. So I guess you could say in the Pizzagate investigation, there are indications that something very unusual is going on there in relation to human trafficking. You could read that into it. I don't think there's enough investigation of it yet to know exactly what was going on. But I don't think, that we should be in a position as independent media of being intimidated or sued by companies into backtracking against investigations. I think that's very dangerous business. It's okay to say you're wrong when you're wrong. But I think the way that we've been seeing things around that story develop tells us that, something very big is going on. For 60 Minutes to do a hit piece on it, for Alex Jones to be apologizing for it. I tell you, from the investigations I've done, whenever you see that type of activity, it means a tremendous amount of pressure is being exerted from somewhere.
Well, Ben Swan did a piece on it that I thought was very kind of vanilla, look at it and saying we should at least be investigating these things because there seems to be ties to questions here. We should be looking into this. He didn't accuse anybody of anything other than, hey, this is something that maybe we should be looking into. Next thing you know, he's off the air.
Yeah. Well, that's a good point, actually.
And it wasn't, I don't think his thing was all that controversial or... the fact that he was taken down for that is points to maybe something is, like you're saying, there's a lot of pressure and there's maybe they're getting close to the truth and people are powerful people are scared.
I think you have to look at that. We know for a fact that these types of activities occur in political circles and that they're used heavily for blackmail purposes. So you'd be hitting at a gigantic point there, a gigantic sensitive area. I think the Franklin scandal is the good foundation for understanding how children are trafficked in political circles. And that gives us a root way to look at this. And I think that some of the things that have come out in relation to, you know, what they're calling Pedogate, it needs to be looked at. I mean, the Jimmy Savile revelation, Sandusky, all of these things are giving us, you know, kind of a much wider angle on this. And, you know, you might have thought when things happened in the past, for example, the society has spotlighted things like domestic violence or bullying, whatever it happens to be, you know, it, kind of like in an Oprah fashion, right?
Exactly.
We've looked at these issues before, but it seems like this, it's, you know, it's so touchy and there's so many political ramifications that people don't, people in the media don't like to go deep and investigate, you know?
There was a show that I saw on YouTube. It's still up there by Dr. Phil. If you get a chance, did you see that show?
Yeah, absolutely. It is very interesting. And that represents a jump, I think.
When did that show, was that show aired originally? Do you know?
That's a good question. I think we should track that down. But it is, yeah. It's fairly recent, that's for sure.
Because that's a big deal. That's exactly what we're pointing at. She's a perfect, I mean, that's the human trafficking in the, and then you see how mentally messed up she is.
There's no question about it. And the two go hand in hand because, you know, what you talk about in those circles too is there's a lot of mind control that goes down. You know, we talk about on the Dark Journalist Show, we talk about brain entrainment and media entrainment a lot. And that's an electronic form of mind control where they actually, it's like subliminal stuff where they embed things in an app to make you addicted to the app. You know, Candy Crush was a very good.
Oh, and I'm still addicted, by the way.
You're getting the programming.
Oh, yeah, well, whatever. At least it's just Candy Crush.
There are studies by different scientists and independent researchers on the effects of entrainment, and I think it's a fascinating topic. But mind control straight up, there are a number of techniques that have been used and utilized over the years in MKUltra programs that came out of the CIA, Project Monarch, where they have developed a mind control method to separate identities inside a person's mind. This happened in the Kathy O'Brien case, where she developed a dissociative identity disorder. And so she actually didn't remember what the other personality was doing. And, you know, we've seen Hollywood movies about this, of course.
The Sybil movie.
Yeah, Manchurian Candidate, this kind of idea is there. But I think it is fascinating because this is their main tool of it's something that they know so well and they've used for political situations. There are many questions around, for example, going back into history a little bit, the Robert F. Kennedy assassination with Sirhan Sirhan, who didn't remember shooting him. And when he was hypnotized, he had the impression that he was shooting at a target, like doing target practice. So there's a lot of very unusual things in his background that suggested he was being used as a CIA tool. Now, what you can do with an assassin like that is you mind control them to do the actual action and then that they forget as soon as they do it. So there's no memory there. It's a certain type of mind control programming. And we have to remember that MKUltra, the only reason that we even know about it is that there were heavy CIA investigations in the 70s that were linked to the idea that the CIA was going around doing these assassinations without congressional approval. And then the CIA got in trouble because more documents got leaked that associated them with the JFK assassination. So it got revealed that they had a mind control program called MKUltra, and the objective of part of the program was to develop a political assassin. Now, Helms, who was the leader of the CIA at the time and who was fired by Nixon and became ambassador to Iran. It's a weird, really weird step before the revolution. But he actually bragged about the fact that he destroyed as many MKUltra files on his way out as he could. So we don't know the full spectrum of that program, who was involved, but we do know that they were developing a mind control technique and that they were also developing a mind control assassin. So, you know, we have to look at the fact that this is what these intelligence agencies do. When you look at the major events in history around like things like the JFK assassination, RFK, MLK, and then we move forward into Watergate, some of these other things, these are such big events that change all the public policies and all these different things happen as a result, but they're never well explained. And they don't make sense in a traditional way. You know, they always portrayed the assassin as a loner, and Oswald is always the great archetype for this. You know, Oswald actually, if you think about it, was incredibly active in these programs because he'd been moved around into different activities and different programs in the military. He'd worked on the U-2 program, which was a CIA unit. So his ties to intelligence are beyond question. And certainly the CIA was very aware of him. So, you know, if they were actually playing like, oh, we didn't know he was going to be there and all the rest of it, you know, there are a lot of things about that case, and it has been studied very well. And I think at this point, a lot of people have come to the conclusion, yes, the CIA was involved in that assassination, and certainly the media covered it up. So where does that leave us? Because, you know, when we look into historical events and we discuss things like mind control or mind control assassinations, how do we get a handle on that? If we're in the public state and they're in the deep state, they have all this secrecy going on. The only thing that we can do is try to hold the public state as accountable as possible. And in the media, try to, you know, create media that gets to transparency and gets to the real story on these things. Because if we don't, then there is a small group that's operating, controlling a number of events. But we have the tools of research available to us. So I think that that's a valuable change in this era versus any other.
Well, it's the only thing we have, right? Because when there's a lack of transparency, the only thing we have is the media. And so if the media is shut down, it's going to destroy our country completely. You can't. It's so important.
Oh, I definitely agree. And I think, you know, my final thought on the deep state part is going to be something along this line, which is the deep state is this term, like I said, they've tried to shrink down in the media. Most of the stories going on about the deep state now are telling us that it doesn't even exist and that it's something that might happen in other countries, but it doesn't happen here.
Yeah, not here.
So, you know, this is very important to get, you know, this is the new programming we're supposed to accept. But if you look into the work of Professor Scott, and like I said, his book, American Deep State, is an excellent place to start. It's coming out with a paperback edition of that. I have a series of interviews with him at darkjournalist.com. And in my work is largely influenced by his studies. And I think you get an idea and a handle from this show, you know, right now, of what's involved in this deep state. Its tentacles go very deep. But it's not just like we're talking about something like McCarthyism or whatever that existed once upon a time. They're so active right now. They're so in our face right now, creating terms like fake news and, you know, the whole Russia Cold War II thing, that this is the best time for us to be aware of this, the real meaning of this. It does not come from Mike Lofgren's book, which was released in 2015 about Republican fundraising. Who cares? That's 0.1% of the problem. And it is not something that only exists in other countries. We have a deep state here in America, and I think it's important for us to bring awareness to it and to understand what their objectives are and see through them to the influences and the forces that are pulling the strings.
Well, you have a three-part series with Professor Peter Dale Scott, but then you also have more that you're doing with the deep state. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's we're calling it the Deep State Spring. And we're doing six episodes around this concept of the deep state. Alexandra Bruce from Forbidden Knowledge TV is joining us. And we're also doing a show with Oxford scholar Joseph Farrell on the deep state. And I'm doing a 60-minute special on it also, which is more documentary style, to give people a better idea of the roots of the deep state, which I think is very important as we see the term now being bandied about in the Washington Post, New York Times, and the Wall Street Journal. This is an important time to get a handle on it and understand what it really is before they try to minimize it. Their new thing now is to say the deep state's a conspiracy theory, which used to be their old favorite term before fake news. So we can see there's a lot of propaganda going around, but certainly in the series, I think if people check that out at darkjournalist.com, you're going to see it's quite an education.
Well, and I think that's what people need. They need the real information, deep information. Your site and your show does a lot in the deep state. I think you've probably done more than almost anybody, and it's original content, talking to leaders from all different walks of life. What can you talk a little bit about what your show in general is about with Dark Journalist and what they can expect to see when they go to your site and see all your shows?
Oh, sure. Well, Dark Journalist really gets, you know, into the deeper aspects. We're looking at aspects that you're not going to run across in mainstream media. And I think one of the important things and why it's called Dark Journalist is we're bringing light into areas that are usually hidden. So there is a big wall of secrecy that happens around topics like deep politics, advanced technology. There are a number of subjects that we go after, and we even go after mystical subjects like UFOs and stuff that's really shrouded in secrecy. But I think that the a lot of the political edge to it is more investigatory. That is, you're not going to find me spouting any particular Republican or Democratic platform, but I have a kind of idea that in the things that are happening in our world, there's a layer of secrecy over it. And so what we're trying to do with the show is get into some of these subjects and really give you the information where you can listen and watch these shows and get a better understanding of the forces that are operating in our world now. And this gets into, you know, transhumanism with the rise of the mechanization and the technology and how our culture is handling that. And the political ramifications and the social ramifications of that are off the charts, of course, because, you know, everything from self-driving cars to robot bartenders. I mean, we're in a different world, a different paradigm here. If we don't get a handle on the political situation and the media before all that kicks in, then we're going to be in a very difficult position. So I would say that it's crucial to be informed and understand who is it really that's controlling things in the world, and why are they creating these scenarios? Why are they doing the things that they're doing? And if we get a handle on that question, I think a lot of the guests that I bring on the show for Dark Journalist, some of them, you know, they've been in government and they've seen the corruption up close, or they've studied it to such a point that they really have a handle on what the main goals of some of these groups are. That's important. You know, it's not any one particular group. It's not going to be the Bilderberg group or the Masons or the CFR that's going to be pulling the strings. It's going to be some interface operating underneath the public state of America that is working and interfacing with all these other groups. I think that's important, a thing to keep in mind. And, you know, as far as Dark Journalist goes, this is incredible because I've always had a lot of material to work with, but because of the recent advent of the media's fascination with the term deep state and with the CIA trying to push this whole thing about Trump with Russia, the alternative media, the independent media, is really in the spotlight right now. And so this is a great time to be doing it. It's a tricky time and maybe too hot a time to be doing it, but I'd say that certainly, this is a lot of more material to work with.
Well, and you're probably one of the most professional out there, which gives you people should be looking at your stuff, hopefully, and seeing what you've put together, because you've had years of information, you all the way back to the John F. Kennedy and probably before that, and just amazing. And you present it in such a professional way, which is something I admire. I think it's really great.
Oh, I really appreciate that. Well, you know, I enjoy listening to your show, Sarah, for the same reason.
I appreciate that too. Well, okay. Well, thank you so much for joining the program. Of course, I'm going to have you back sometime in the future as things develop and there's so many other things to cover. But thank you so much for joining us today.
That's great, Sarah. It's great to be here.
And that concludes my interview with Daniel Lentz, dark journalist. Again, you can see part one at sarahwestall.com. You can get contact information for him, get to his YouTube channel or his website at darkjournalist.com. And he has exclusive content that you can see if you become a member. It's only $39 for a year. And he has just a ton of different videos with all sorts of content like this that can open your eyes to what's going on in the world. And no one else is like him. He dives into subjects that, in a very professional way, into subjects that the mass media does not touch, but he does it in a journalistic, professional way. And I think you could appreciate his methods and how he approaches the topics. And again, you can go to sarahwestall.com and subscribe to my YouTube channel or to my newsletter that goes out about once a week. So for now, everybody have an amazing day.